So firstly, we mentioned it already, the well-formed outcome questions and the meta model. The real power from coaching for those two particular set of questions is to combine them. We're actually going to do an exercise on this afternoon, where you combine the well-formed outcome questions and the meta model together as a set of questioning techniques. This is something that we developed as part of our training program. We actually offered people as an experiment just to see what would happen. A two-hour coaching session following a training, which is purely around coaching people around an outcome. And what I trained the coaches at the Coaching Partnership to do was to combine the well-formed outcome questions and the meta model together and taught them to switch off all mind reading. Because what I noticed was that when somebody was coaching somebody around an outcome, first question is, so what do you want? The client would then say, this is what I want. The coach would then do a massive amount of mind reading, which enabled them to go like, okay, I know what the client wants. But in actual fact, if you switched off all of your own stuff, and the clients, and you say to the client, what do you want? And they then share with you what you want. If you switch off all mind reading, you find that in actual fact, you haven't got a clue, really, what the client wants. So with each of the answers to the well-formed outcome questions, if you ask the meta model questions to get specificity and clarify what the client really means, then you as the coach do know exactly what the client wants. And what I found is, from actually experiment, we probably did about 500 two-hour coaching sessions with that particular model that's just tested out using well-formed outcomes combined with meta model and switching off mind reading. And what we found was that quite often when you ask the well-formed outcome questions, as in the first one, what do you want, the client tells you, the coach was doing a massive mind read as to what the client wanted, so that they go like, okay, I know what the client wants. When in actual fact, they didn't really know what the client wants, and what I found was neither did the client. Neither did the client know what they were saying meant either. They certainly didn't have a real kind of good quality, detailed internal representation. So by doing that, and in a two-hour session, the coaches were not allowed to do any other process other than well-formed outcome questions and the meta model. And what we found was that people left that coaching session incredibly congruent about the goal. And that getting that level of specificity actually enabled them to increase their congruence. And people left those two-hour coaching sessions almost as if the achievement of a goal was a foregone conclusion. And all the coaches were using were the well-formed outcome questions and the meta model. That's all. So those two combined are very, very powerful. And we'll do. I'll give you some more distinctions on that, and you can do an exercise around it so you can experience it for yourself later on. Then there's the Milton model. Obviously, you can use the Milton model for giving suggestions to the client's unconscious mind. The other place where the Milton model is invaluable is when you're coaching someone around physical activities. When you're actually coaching someone around a physical activity that they're doing right at that moment in time, the Milton model is very, very useful. I would never have thought of using the Milton model in that situation until I was on the receiving end of it. I was doing a trainer's training out in California, and we run the trainer's training, even the one in the UK, we run it from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m., so people get the mornings off. And the coaches and the trainers get the mornings off. The students normally have things to do in the mornings, like preparing their presentations, etc. But anyway, as a trainer, I got the morning off. Some of the people who were also coaching and training on the program said, you know, I'm in Southern California, I'm in Newport Beach, and they go like, do you want to come rollerblading on Newport Beach? And I go like, what a totally Southern California thing to do, you know, rollerblade. So I said, well, yeah, I'd love to. Go, great, let's go then. I go like, but I've never rollerbladed before. And they're like, oh, it's all right, it's easy. I mean, you've ice skated, yeah? And I'm like, no. Yeah, but you've roller skated, yeah? I went like, no. They went, right. But I said, I want to give it a go, though. And they're like, oh, God, what did we ask him? You know? So anyway, we went over to Newport Beach. I rented my rollerblades and knee pads, elbow pads, crash helmet. I looked like Darth Vader on the beach, you know? And I couldn't even stand up. I mean, I was all over the place, you know? And they were like, rollerblading up, down, you know, and I'm kind of like falling over left, right, and center. And one of the people who took me was actually had been a champion ice skater. So she said, okay, like, I'll spend a bit of time giving you the basics, you know. So she said, grab hold of my arms, I'll skate backwards, and you skate forward. I'm like, you're going to skate backwards? My God, I can't even skate forward. She skated backwards whilst holding onto my arms like this. And even then, I just did not have the physical strategies to be able to do, to be able to do rollerblading. If I just stayed like this, she just towed me. I was fine, you know. But as soon as she said, now, actually, you start actually skating, I was all over the place. And I just was not getting it at all. I mean, really not getting it. And then she just suddenly started putting all of the instructions that she'd been giving me to learn to rollerblade, she started putting in Milton model patterns. So all of the things she was asking me to do were actually given to me as a suggestion, using Milton model patterns to utilize what I was actually experiencing to lead onto the suggestions. And within a matter of minutes, I was actually then rollerblading. She was still holding onto me, but I was rollerblading. I could get the movement from her using the Milton model. And within 10 minutes, I was rollerblading without holding on to it. I still haven't learned to stop, which was an interesting experience when I got at the end of the block, you know. But I would have never thought of using the Milton model in that way until I experienced it, and it made a total difference to me as soon as she started giving me the instructions in the Milton model. So I think if somebody's doing a physical activity, coaching them around it, giving them feedback, using the Milton model, it gets their conscious mind out of the way. That was the problem I had. I was thinking too much. And thinking does not make safe and successful rollerblading. So as soon as she got my conscious mind out of the way and gave my unconscious mind positive internal representations to focus on, I learned to rollerblade very, very quickly. So that's a great place to use a Milton model. Then there's values elicitation and utilization. Eliciting values for a certain area of a person's life and utilizing the values to assist someone in motivating themselves. Notice that is not about changing values. So we teach eliciting values and utilizing values on our master practitioner training, though I've said there was no NLP training in this particular training. I am going to teach you how to do values, elicitation, utilization. I'm going to teach you early, earlier than the master practitioner, because I think it's like a real vital coaching skill. So I'm going to teach you that. For those of you who've done master practitioner training with me, you'll know that we spent a lot of time working around how do we go about changing someone's values if their values aren't working for them. I would say that comes outside of the bounds of coaching. So, because I wouldn't do any change work on somebody's values without doing full detailed personal history first. That's, for me, that's therapy. That's change work, okay? So in the coaching, what we do is we elicit values and we teach the client how to utilize the values to create motivation. And also so that when they set goals, they can actually discern that they're setting goals which are in alignment with their values. In coaching, I wouldn't go around changing somebody's values. You haven't got time, quite honestly. So I will be teaching how to elicit and utilize. That'll probably be tomorrow. So I would say any kind of like formal change technique from NLP is outside of the scope for coaching. But then there are a lot of techniques within NLP that would fall into what I would call conversational change. Change techniques that you can actually assist people in changing beliefs, you know, all that kind of problems, but dealing with them purely conversationally rather than a formal change technique. I think that does fall into the realm of coaching. So the kind of techniques I would say would be reframing, meaning and context reframes. Can be very, very effective for assisting someone in overcoming a limiting belief. Sleight of mouth patterns, master practitioner content, basically giving you around about 16, 17 different ways of reframing a belief until it disappears. The quantum linguistics techniques that we teach on master practitioner, that some of you have learned, all of those things I would say are okay within coaching. And the thing about conversational change techniques is that you can't actually guarantee that they're going to work. They can loosen up the model of the world, and sometimes you may deliver a reframe or sleight of mouth pattern or whatever it is, and the problem disappears. And you can't absolutely guarantee it's going to do that, which you would be able to with a regular change technique. So I think it's okay to use conversational change techniques if it's not getting the result and the person's beliefs aren't changing, and they're still running up against their boundaries, I think that is the time to switch into something like breakthrough session to get that out of the way before going back into coaching again. But conversational techniques, I think is totally okay. The meta mirror, or perceptual positions, I think is a useful technique within coaching, particularly if you're coaching someone around relationships. Not relationships necessarily like their intimate relationship, but relationships in business and all those kind of things too. It's a very useful technique for people to get new learnings, new perspectives. And metaphor. I think the use of transformational metaphor. or therapeutic metaphor within coaching is totally appropriate too. But you'll notice there's no actual techniques there that would require what I would call a detailed personal history before proceeding. When I do a detailed personal history with a client, which I do before I do anything like timeline therapy or any of the change techniques of NLP, I always do a detailed personal history, which quite often will take me around about 2.5 to 3 hours, and that's just the detailed personal history. If I'm doing coaching, which when I do coaching, I tend to do in 2-hour segments, I can't even fit a detailed personal history into a coaching session, let alone any change work. So I think these techniques, the conversational techniques are okay. Anything more than that, I think really you need to move out of the coaching role into something like breakthrough session or what you might call NLP therapy.